When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day. Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian. I'm packed and I'm holding. I'm smiling. She living. She go then. She lives for me. Says she lives for me. Ovation. Who won't motivation? She comes round and she goes down on me. And I make it smile like a drug for you. I've had a revelation.
Oh my God. What a way to start.
Yeah. A revelation. What do you think about that?
Well, when you came in today, I had no idea. I just now I'm so intrigued.
I think I've discovered the secret to life.
Really? I'm serious.
I have the answer.
Okay, I better sit down.
Sit down. I have said this before probably, but maybe not with the intensity and the ferocity and the absolute 100% conviction.
Oh, would you just tell us your revelation?
Okay. Balance. Let me explain. Okay. So it's so funny, right? I have these two kids, and over the course of the last several months, people from various aspects of my world at various times in my life have materialized with texts, emails, phone calls, letters through mutual friends. And every single one of them says, you know, I know you're going to be an amazing mom. And, you know, having been at this now for a little while, I realize I don't know what that means. What does that mean? There is no such thing as an amazing mom. And for all you moms out there who are going, I'm an amazing mom, just hold on and hear me out for a second. Because I look at the host of choices in front of me, right? Every time I try to make a decision with my daughter about how to handle her bedtime, her tantrums, her eating, her this, her that. The newborn's pretty straightforward, obviously. Phoenix is easy. I'm not there yet. You know what to do with him. It's like he eats, he burps,
and he poops.
He poops, he sleeps,
and he poops some more.
Yeah, it's like you pretty much, you feed him whenever they want to eat, and you put him down whenever he needs to sleep, and they don't cry it out. It's like, those are, you know, it's very straightforward. But the two-year-old, let me tell you, at any given minute, you can make 5 separate decisions about how to handle a situation. And you try to make the right one, but it's like you're going to be an amazing mom. And I thought to myself, what does that mean? Is an amazing mom the mom who breastfeeds for 3.5 years? Because some of us would say, or some people, I'm not judging. I don't have an answer. Some people would say, like, that's sick. That's twisted. That's like that's about you. You're suffocating the child. You're overwhelming the child. Is then the French who consider themselves amazing moms, they don't breastfeed at all. They go straight to formula, and they're like, no,
this is better because, you know, I can be happier and my husband can be happier when I'm happier and our relationship's happier, then the kid's going to be happier. And they don't even understand the concept of breastfeeding in France. They think we're crazy. And they would think that the woman who breastfeeds for 3.5 years is bananas. So, again, I'm going to ask you, what is an amazing mom? And then you have the moms who are like, well, I never, ever raise my voice and I give my child whatever they want and I indulge them. And I that's how kids naturally are. They're meant to get into everything. And I've seen that parenting style. And then I've seen the parenting style where everything's no. Kids need boundaries. Kids need structure. And by the way, every single parent is convinced of their method. So the question is, what does that even mean? Who is amazing and who isn't amazing? It's a subjective answer. And also, each kid is different. I realize now the things that I might do with my son, I wouldn't do with my daughter down the road when he's two. Each kid is so unique that the choice you make with one might not be the choice you make with another. It might not be the right choice. And so as I was angsting like a crazy person about not wanting to screw her up, about wanting to be the amazing mom, I came to the realization that the answer is usually right down the middle. That whenever I was tortured about what decision to make or how to handle something, the answer's usually right down the middle. So it's good to have boundaries for kids. And I set bedtime boundaries that are strictly enforced. This is her bedtime. This is her nap time. These are her food times. These are my limitations on certain foods. You know, she doesn't get to eat Hershey bars. You know what I mean? Like, those are her. And we have to keep up basic hygiene. You try to brush her hair, she screams bloody murder. I'm like, you know what? Your hair's going to dread. Tough noogies. I'm brushing your... Did I just say tough noogies?
Yeah, I didn't want to say anything. I just put, you know, it's nice to put my head down.
I would have said tough S word prior to that, this. But anyway.
Yeah, you're
tough
changing.
Noogies.
I'm going to add that on
tough noogies.
Your new vocabulary.
Right. Oh, God. So, but, and I try to make a game out of it. I do whatever I can to get through it. But I'm like, no, you know, she's eaten and there's food all over her face and she doesn't want her face wiped off. And some parents are like, us, you know, who cares? Pick your battles. I'm like, no. Basic hygiene. We've got it. You know, these are my boundaries now. And then with anything else, I try to say yes as much as I can. So I try to I try to hold this basic frame for her. And I try to say yes to whatever else. She wants to walk Richard. Fine. You walk Richard. Go ahead. We're on the beach. She can't let go of him. We won't run into traffic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you want to drink with an adult cup? Okay. Well, let me give you a plastic one. Go ahead. It's going to spill everywhere. Well, we're all going to live. It's not juice. It's water. Like, I get the rest of it. I try, you know, again, it's like, I try to say yes. You want to put lotion on yourself and put it in your hair? Well, it's not going to be the end of your hair. Okay. But I realize, you know, did your mom or dad ever have this conversation with you? And for anyone out there who has heard this from their parents and or kind of judged their parents or been angry at their parents for certain things, you want to understand your parents, be a parent. You will forgive them. You will understand them in a way that you never have. And have you ever heard, you know, look, we did the best we could. Have you ever heard that from your parents?
No, but I know it's been said a lot.
My mom has said that to me. Honey, you know what? We did the best we could. My friend Colin was telling me he got in a conversation with his mother the other day. And it's like, look, you know what? We're sorry. We screwed you up. We love you dearly. And we did the best we could. And I realize now that I will have that conversation with my daughter. And it's going to go, you know what, sweetie? You were a traumatized orphan. We were new parents. We had a newborn. And we made the decisions we thought were the right ones. And if it wasn't the right decision, I am so sorry. And we love you. And we did the best we could. And I mean it. And I used to think when my parents said that, I was like, that's such an excuse. That was an excuse to be selfish or to do what you wanted to do or to be what you needed to be, not to be there for me. But in truth, now I realize they meant it.
But Jillian, isn't that half a sentence? I did the best I could. isn't it? I did the best I could with the tools that I had.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
Because it does sound, when you say I did the best I could, it does kind of sound like an excuse. You know, do you know what I mean?
And but it's not, go, Janice.
I know.
It's,
no,
I get now that it's not. And I think, and that's why I think the go-to is that middle ground. But wait, finish your thought here.
Well, no, it's just, we only have the tools that we have. We're only taught, we've only taken in what we have. And,
so
and,
true.
And you can only give what you have. So to make it a longer sentence, for me, that's just for me anyway. It makes me go, oh, you know, like.
Despite my limitations.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's so true. And I guess so. I think the takeaway on this segment is it's a two-parter. Really, if you are a parent, then you'll understand this. If you're not a parent, just trust me on this. You'll find a new way to look at your parents and understand that with the tools that they had, emotionally, literally,
financially,
they did the best that they could do. And I realize now that, okay, she's going to all, if we weren't screwed up, we wouldn't have any depth. We wouldn't have anything to work out. We wouldn't have any issues. There'd be no sort of life's journey to solve our, you know, unravel our psychology and evolve as people and grow. You wouldn't have that. So I guess it's there for a reason. And there is just no perfect decision. You can't make a perfect decision. Who knows what the answer is? And if you're looking for a go-to, no matter if it's your parenting or your job or your relationships or even your health, that gray area is going to hold the answer, as hard as it is. And it's so hard because you've got to live, when you live in the gray part, you've got to live in disappointment of, well, I wasn't the perfect parent and I got to deal with the guilt of that. Or I wasn't, you know, this did have flaws and that's hard, but at least nothing is black or white. Nothing is all good or all bad. And I think any extreme is a dangerous game. And I think that answer of balance, like, ride that middle line. Go to the middle. When you're like, I'm never eating sugar again, or I'm on a binge. The answer is, and I've always said this with wellness, it's been obvious to me. The answer is, sure, you can have sugar. Just do it in moderation and work it into your calorie allowance. Go ahead. Sugar's not going to kill you. Like, the one thing, you know, you were smart. The place where you don't use balance is, I don't want you having things like trans fats and chemicals in your food, just like you wouldn't parent your kids with balance when it comes to things that are dangerous. Like, you can run in traffic sometimes. No, you get what I'm saying. That's the balance of, like, you can have a little bit of sugar and work it in your calorie allowance. You know, your kids can run free in a safe environment. You don't need a helicopter around them. They have to hold your hand in the parking lot, but you don't necessarily need to hold on to them, or they don't need to sit in their stroller, whatever it might be. Anyway, that's my takeaway. Forgive your parents as best you can for not being perfect, really. Because, by the way, holding the grudge doesn't do you any good or them any good. And just, oh, my God. Oh, I can't. The conversation I'm going to have with her one day when she's 25. Honey, we did the best we could. The tools that we had. And when in doubt, ride the middle line. Go to the middle ground. Live in that gray world. And I think it's going to be okay.
Now, this would be a perfect moment for a lovely song, don't you think?
Ah, crap, Janice.
Just a nice song.
No, you're going to play something cheesy.
No, it'll be something a little more hip, but I am going to play something.
No, because then I'm going to listen to this, and I'm going to want to gouge my ears out, and I'm going to be humiliated. Like when you guys played, like,
Enya.
I believe I can fly. No. I'll never get over that. We're way cooler than that, dude.
All right, okay, I won't. No, it was an excellent segment. I won't. But I just, all of a sudden,
you will.
I just
You're
felt,
going to.
I felt something welling musically up. Welling up. Exactly. But I'll.
And I just want you all to know that it's Janice. It's not me. Whatever's playing behind
right,
my voice right
now.
I am way cooler
than this. All right. That your fear seems to hide deep inside your mind. All alone I have cried, silent tears full of pride, in a world made of steel.
Okay, I'm so excited for today's guest. Her name is Lauren Berger, and she is the author of All Work and No Pay. And guess what we're going to talk about? We're going to talk about how to help you get a job in this extremely competitive market by customizing and tailoring and perfecting your resume. So, with no further ado, I'm going to introduce Lauren. Lauren, hello. Thank you so much for being here. So, all right. Talk to me. We know that right now so many Americans are out of work. It's such a competitive environment. And I read the statistic that you told my producer that employers are only scanning your resume for 15 seconds?
A quick 15 seconds and that's it.
You're serious?
Yep, so you got to impress them quickly. It's important to have your information organized because they're going to be looking for where you live. They're going to be looking at if you graduated college and what year you graduated. Mm. And they're going to look at that previous experience.
Okay. Now, if you only have 15 seconds, should you or shouldn't you send a cover letter then? Is it like, ugh, I don't want to read this? Or is it like a really great way to make a first impression?
I say always send a cover letter. It's just a safe bet. And that cover letter really helps you connect the dots for the employer. If you're living in New York City and you're moving to Los Angeles and applying for a job in LA, but your resume says
right.
New York, you got to connect the dots for the employer or else they're throwing your resume out because they don't want to waste their time. You can't give the employer any reason to hesitate. So the cover letter, again,
so
is a great tool to really connect the dots.
That's so interesting you say that because I've had, when I've taken resumes in for whether it's an assistant or a brand manager, and I deal with it, whereas usually my business partner will deal with it, but when it's for something that has to do with me, and I see that they live like an hour and a half away, I'm just like, oh no, I can't. This is I need them there at all hours.
Right.
And I will, you're right. I've actually not interviewed people because of that.
Right. Now if you saw a cover letter that said, well, I'm moving
yes.
to Los Angeles
you're
on
right.
this date, I'm available starting this date, then maybe it's a different story.
Yeah,
so
you're
I
right.
say a cover letter is a safe bet. If an employer's not gonna read it, they're not gonna read it.
Okay.
But if they are gonna read it, you want something that's easy to read and that's short. You don't wanna write them a novel. Also, if you're emailing your resume, which everybody does these days, if you're emailing your materials, attach them. Attach your cover letter, attach your resume, save them with professional titles. Don't write, you know, Lauren's coolest resume ever, you know?
Right.
Lauren Berger, professional resume, whatever it is. But attach them. In the body of the email, just write a short note.
Okay.
Hi, Jillian. I'm applying for your executive position, and attached is my cover letter and my resume.
So smart.
Because when you see a big email, you either put it aside or you press delete. Nobody wants to read that big, long novel.
No, you're absolutely right. They don't. And it just becomes like, oh, I don't have time for this.
Exactly.
And then whenever I've seen that personally, I think to myself like, oh my God, this assistant's gonna hit me with more than I need to be handling. Like
right.
I just need them to give me like the short, sweet information.
It's overbearing, exactly.
It's overwhelming and overbearing. That's exactly,
yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, you've also said that people should tailor their resume towards the job position or the company. How do you do this though if your experience is your experience?
You know, a lot of people these days have a lot of experience, and with the popularity of internships, a lot of students have a ton of things on their resume. I'll meet people and they'll say, oh, my resume is 3 pages long. And I say, what? 3 pages long? You can't have a 3-page long resume. Uh-huh. A 1-page resume. And how do you make that, you know, turn that 3-page resume into a 1-pager is you tailor your experience for the position you're applying for. So if I'm applying for an entertainment position, then I'm going to include my most impressive entertainment experience.
Got it. So like, don't put, if you were a PA on a show 5 years ago, and you put, I ran for coffee, but then, you know, you've subsequently been like an associate producer on a show, like leave the PA gig off the resume.
Right. It's time to cut those things off.
Got
it. I used to work at Red Lobster in high school, but you know what? Red Lobster's not on my resume anymore.
That makes perfect sense. Okay. I totally get it. I got it. All right. Now I have seen a lot of resumes, and if it's chaos on the page, I have ADD though. I really do. I swear to God, it's unbelievable. My assistant has to like highlight stuff for me because I get so scattered. So if it looks like
jumbled,
yeah, I can't deal with it. So what kind of format do you recommend? And or is it, could it just be like a paragraph, or should it be bulleted, or how?
For the resume.
How do you write it clearly?
Right. I think bullet points are a great idea. Again, the previous experience is really what people are looking at these days. And it makes sense. If you're an employer, who are you going to hire? The person with the most experience or the person without? The person with.
Yeah.
So you need to make sure that on that resume, that previous experience is very clear. And today, internships, you know, I'm the intern queen, so internships are huge today. So it's really important.
So true. I just got my little sister one at Self Magazine.
I like that.
And it's like, and yeah. I thought to myself, I'm so jealous. I want to be my little siblings. I'm like, where was me when I was a kid?
Right.
Because it's like, it's so all her friends, like she goes to Sarah Lawrence. It's a great college. Mm-hmm. And maybe out of 50 kids that she knows, maybe three of them got internships.
Right. And it's so important because, again, who's the employer going to pick? The student with experience or without? And it's, you know, it's lower risk if you hire the student with the experience. So you want to make sure that, especially with internships, you highlight that on your resume, especially if you're going for an entry-level job. Obviously, if you're a seasoned executive, you're going to slowly, you know, not including that internship experience. But the previous experience is really important. And then just clearly stating not only what you did for the company. I'm not really into people just listing what they did, but really saying, what did you do for the company and how did that affect the business?
Smart.
You know,
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
That's clever. I would love to see that because it shows like a cause and effect and that they're cognizant and aware of the work they're doing and the outcome. They're not just sort of like blindly going through the motions.
Right. So it's not just I ran the Facebook page for company X. It's I ran the Facebook page. And what that means is I took them from zero likes to 5,000 likes, which is actually very hard to do and very impressive. So really showing the effect of the task that you did for that company.
Okay. Now, you also say no photos and no color. I would think like I'd want it to pop or...
You know, it is a fine line to walk. There are a lot of companies, especially today, especially with a lot of these creative entrepreneurs and startups everywhere. There is a time and a place for some color, but you do have to be careful because most companies are still very traditional. The color, a little bit of color, okay. But when you start doing the Elle Woods Legally Blonde resume that's scented and has, you know, some squiggly lines, we start having problems.
Sorry. Okay, got it. Don't be too eccentric.
Right. And then also pictures. You can't have your picture on your resume. If you're applying to be an actress, great. You know, show your headshot. But a photo on a resume, no. You want to be hired for your professional characteristics, not for the way you look.
That's interesting. I've actually gotten resumes with photos and haven't actually thought anything of it, but that makes perfect sense. I have one more question for you. Talk to me about references. Do they belong with the resume or do you say like furnished upon request?
Right. I usually go with the references available upon request, just a small line at the end of your resume.
Okay.
Some employers want to see them, some don't. I mean, hey, it's never a bad idea to go in and interview for a position. And if someone that you've worked with in the past knows the person you interviewed with or knows someone at that company, them getting a phone call on your behalf, never a bad idea. But unless they specifically ask for references, you really don't need to submit them. But you should always have references on hand. And I say every year, try to get 3 new references. Usually, you know, a good reference letter is I think, acceptable for the period of 1 year. But always have them on hand because you never know when you're going to apply for that job. You're going to need the references. And if the deadline's tomorrow and you have nothing, what are you going to do? So I always say try to have an academic, a professional, and a personal reference letter on hand at all times. And just keep them laminated in a safe place.
Smart.
You know, keep them on a file on your desktop. And that way you always have something current.
I'm so sorry. I have one more question. Okay. I apologize. I guess you
talk.
I have one more question. I have been guilty of this in the past, and I'm just curious to know what your thoughts are on it. I've seen it work for me, but I've seen it work against other people. What do you think about embellishing your resume a little bit? Like if you're trying to make that jump to the next level, or maybe implying that you have experience you don't have, but thinking you'll bite off, you know, more than you can chew and chew it when you get there, or... Do you think, huge mistake?
You gotta be careful. You really don't want to embellish. And I was just watching Suits last night on USA, and one guy got fired on that show for embellishing on his resume and lying about taking a test. So no, you don't want to lie on your resume. You really need to be truthful.
Okay.
I mean, you know, again, let's go back to my Red Lobster experience. If that's on my resume, we love Red Lobster, right? The cheesy bread. Well, you don't like the cheesy bread.
No,
we will
no
never
cheesy
tell
bread.
Joey and Michaels we eat cheesy
no
bread.
No cheesy bread.
Anyways, so when I worked at Red Lobster, I put that on my resume, and maybe I exaggerated the tasks I did a little bit. Red Lobster, I did customer service, customer satisfaction.
Okay.
I mean, I was a hostess.
Got
the hostess it. With the mostest, you know, but you want to really look at what you've done if you have limited experience and try to make the most of it. So I think there's a difference between that and then, you know, saying you went to Harvard on your resume or saying you worked somewhere you didn't work. You always have to assume that everyone knows everyone and that everyone's going to check. And if they what's going to happen?
You're screwed.
So you really got to be careful.
Let's talk about first impressions. How important is a first impression when you're applying for a job?
A first impression is really crucial, and you're really setting the precedent for your entire existence at a company. When you set that first impression, you know, I always tell students, yes, it's about the first impression, getting there early, looking your best, being on top of your game. But you got to remember that once you make that first impression, you are responsible for being consistent and holding to that first impression every single day of that job or that internship.
It reminds me of dating. It's like when you first start dating somebody and you're like, wow, you're so smart and funny and together. And then you're kind of like, wait a minute, you're a mess and actually not working and actually not. Yeah, okay. That makes perfect. Not that I'm not perfectly happy. I'm perfectly happy in my relationship. Heidi is everything I could want and more. Sorry, I could have gotten in trouble for that. Okay, so talk to me then about dress. That's actually so important, no? I mean, and you say 40% of people don't dress properly? That seems like a big number.
Yes, you have to dress for the part. And today, it's not only the in-office interview. There's the phone interview, which is extremely popular. There's the Skype interview. And then there's what I call the Starbucks interview.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, again, startups,
the
entrepreneurs.
Skype interview?
Skype interview, absolutely. Especially if you're
interviewing. My God, I'm so old. Okay, sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, you're interviewing for a job in Los Angeles. You live in New York. The employer wants to talk to you tomorrow. They're not going to pay for your flight. Well, why don't they, you know, save the cost and do a Skype interview?
Okay, got it.
I have to tell students to wear pants to a Skype interview. Pants. They don't wear pants. They dress from the top up because they're doing a Skype interview. What if they stand up? What if something happens? You have to be fully dressed for a Skype interview.
You know what? I didn't even think about it. You know, it's so funny because when you do like SMTs, which are satellite media tours, they only shoot you from the waist up. And I have been guilty of having like, you know, some sort of top on and then sweatpants on. I didn't even think about that.
You got to be careful.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. Oh, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And when we're talking about Skype interviews, also, you got to control your surroundings. So many young people that are graduating are doing these Skype interviews from their college dorms. Guys have the provocative girl in the background,
that's
you know,
right.
on their wall. Girls have their Backstreet Boys posters up. Well, maybe not today, but
please God.
You know, you have
please
your
God,
stuff
I
up in the
not.
Back. You have to control your environment. If you are going to do a Skype interview, you have to give that professional feel.
Okay, of course. And this has been kind of confusing for me, and I think people struggle with it when it comes to a job at our company. So I'm an athletic person,
right?
And we run an athletic health and wellness company. Do they show up in a kind of sporty, kind of zest for life, sort of jeans and a shirt, but clean with a little loafer? It's like casual lifestyle. Or do they show up in like a full suit? And I'll be honest, I don't know the answer. Even when I'm wanting them to show up, I'm kind of waiting to just see like, who are they? Is there room for leeway, or do you always like three-piece suit and that's the way that it is?
You know, I think that the safe way to go, because everyone is so different these days, every company environment is different today.
Yeah.
Today, most workplaces do have a more casual feel than they have in the past.
Yeah, we're so laid back.
So I say you always dress to impress. I mean, hey, it's not a bad thing for the student or the graduate to leave the interview and have the employer thinking, wow, they were really trying to impress me. I mean, that's what the employer wants. When you're doing an interview, you want to know that this candidate takes that position seriously and they're dressing to impress. Now, in the interview, if you do come in your suit, which I suggest that men and women both invest in one business suit. Get it when you're young.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be really expensive. Mm-hmm. Get something that looks nice. You'll wear it forever.
Yeah.
My business suit from high school still hangs in my closet. I mean, you can wear it. You really can. You know, you can wear it forever. And in the interview, say, you know, what is the dress code? If I were to get this position, what is the dress code like on a daily basis? And
smart.
Especially at the more casual companies. But again, dressing to impress is crucial.
Okay. This is a big one for me, mm-hmm. even though I'm not exactly good at it myself. Being on time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I look for any reason to weed out. I put an ad up for an assistant on like a Hollywood talent agency's
right.
board. And I mean, I had 1,000 submissions. And it's like you look for anything to start weeding people out.
Absolutely.
And one of them was an hour late and she was like, I'm so sorry. I live here and I just didn't gauge the traffic right. And I mean, the interview was over for me when
right,
she was 10 minutes
out.
Late.
It's done.
That's
Absolutely.
The end of the world? Or you am I what? Just a jerk?
It pretty much, it really can be the end of the world. In your case, you're interviewing 1,000 applicants. Maybe if that person was applying for a position for someone who had two resumes, mm-hmm. maybe it would have been a different story.
Okay.
But you have to expect that you're interviewing against a lot of people.
Yeah.
And you have to get there early. I mean, 15 minutes early, that's the rule of thumb. But remember, then you're going to be at your job early. You don't want to interview, arrive 15 minutes early, and then your first day at the job, arrive 15 minutes late. That's
yep.
not the right impression to set. So you really need to be careful.
All right. And then you say that you should have knowledge of the company you're interviewing for. How much knowledge? Like in-depth detail, just broad strokes, personal information about the person that you're interviewing with, or is that
right.
too much?
You got to do your homework.
Okay.
I say before you even apply for the job, you need to figure out what you're applying for. I'm not into people blindly applying for positions. Don't just apply for a job because you need a job. Actually read over the listing. Visit the company website. Because
smart.
If not, maybe it's not the right position for you.
Yeah.
Then you're wasting the employer's time. You're wasting your time. I always say take 2 hours one night and just go to town online and read anything you can. Obviously, going to the company website is mm-hmm. the first step. You're going to read the About Us. Most companies have a mission statement on their website or just a clear statement defining the goals of the business. You mm-hmm. want to familiarize yourself with that. Also, read any press releases the business has put
okay.
out. Companies like to use certain words to describe themselves, certain buzzwords. So really picking up on those buzzwords.
That's
and,
true. You're right.
Yeah.
We do. I didn't even think about that. That's right.
Right. And kind of incorporating those words into
mirroring
your interview.
Mirroring them back.
You know, you don't want to, you know, I know the mission statement of this company is.
Right.
You don't want to do that. But, you know, just kind of incorporating those words, making it seem very organic is a good way to do it.
And should you go in with a game plan or is that too aggressive? As in like, I know you guys are working to achieve this, and I feel that a great strategy would be, or is it like, should you do more listening or more talking or find a balance?
I think you do more listening, and I think asking questions is very powerful. I do think you should have some questions that you might have for the employer written down ahead of time.
So smart.
I think this shows that you take it very seriously.
Right.
But if the employer answers your questions during the interview, don't feel pressured. A lot of candidates say, oh no, I gotta ask my questions. He answered them. Now I have to think of random questions on the spot. It's okay. You don't have to ask them, but it's always good to have some questions prepared ahead of time for the employer. I always like to say, describe a typical day as an employee, you know, in this position at your company. And that'll really help you get a feel for what you're getting yourself into.
That's a great question. All right, last one. Are employers really going on people's Facebook profiles?
Yes.
That's creepy. That's
it makes
wrong.
Sense.
I think it's an invasion of privacy.
Is it morally correct? Probably not. But
it's none of your business.
Right. I
don't do that.
Employers are just like you and me, everybody. And think about it. When you're at work, and I'm talking to everybody, when you're at work, what do you have open? If it's football season, you probably have your fantasy football window open. You have your Gmail open with GChat. You're G-chatting with all your friends, and you're stalking your ex-boyfriend or your ex-girlfriend on Facebook. We're all doing it. So, if you're an employer...
I love the candor. Let's be honest. Let's talk about what you're really doing at work.
So,
put all the BS aside. You know you're on Facebook.
You know you're doing it. So,
oh my God.
If you're an employer, you have a resume in front of you of Cindy White, how easy is it to type Cindy White's name into Facebook and to see if she has a,
a
bikini picture, if she's wasted in her photo, what
oh
she has
my
listed.
God, I mean,
I can't
believe
it.
I will admit that, so I was interviewing for new assistants, and I had sort of narrowed it down, right? And Heidi, my partner, is much, she's not much younger than me, but I consider like 31 to 38 in the technology world a lot younger. And she did go on a couple of these girls' Facebook profiles, and there was one that was like partying and wasted,
right.
And who was supposed to be, by the way, the most qualified. And I was like, I'm like, babe, this is not fair. I mean, would you, come on, we've been drunk before. We've partied with friends before.
Right.
We've taken those pictures before. And she was like, no, you're not hiring
right.
this girl.
And
that was that.
And you know
it wasn't a battle worth fighting. You
right.
pick your battle, but that was that. I mean, I personally don't have the time to do it, but
right.
I guess I see. Why can't you just make your page private?
Well, you know what? At this point, Facebook is so popular. We've been talking about this now for years.
Okay.
And if students don't know to keep a professional profile, I mean, we're not saying they can't have pictures of their friends in their photos. I have pictures of my friends. But to be wasted, to be, you know, in that provocative bikini, flashing the peace sign. I mean, to be the guy with the beer in your hand, throwing up in your profile picture. Really? I mean, you got to get it together. And if they don't know that by now, they are not the candidate for you.
Oh, my God. Thank you so, so much. Lauren Berger, everybody. The book, All Work, No Pay. It is awesome and a quick, fast, informative read. Check it out. And where can we go to learn more? Website, please.
Internqueen.com.
Lauren, thank you so much.
Thank
that
you.
Was, informative and quite frankly, hilarious.
Yes.
Painfully honest and hilarious. So, you know what to do. Make it happen. Get it together and get that gig.
Sun is coming up slowly. I didn't read any of your star sign on mine. God knows I'm not holy. And decisions we make and how we spend our time. But I got faster and faster. And you got harder to please and you got harder to find. And our prayers were answered. But we wrote these songs and we lost our minds. And all our most brilliant friends are doubting themselves.
Okay. Email question from Leisha. I'm 28 years old.
Got it.
I have struggled with my weight for the last 8 years. I absolutely find you an inspiration. My question for you is, how do I find out what my true issues are that are causing me to struggle with my weight?
My mom answered this really well on the Daily Dose. I think we put the segment on our podcast, didn't we? You can't. I mean, it's tough to do on your own because generally they are unconscious. So we utilize food as a coping mechanism from patterns or issues we experienced earlier on in life that become so painful that we become unconscious about them. I'll give you an example. There was a young boy on a season of Biggest Loser. His name was Austin. He wasn't actually my contestant, so they never aired this segment with him, but it was one of my favorites. He went home for Christmas. He and his dad were on the show. His mother was not. His mother was also overweight. He came back from Christmas, and he had gained like 10 pounds or 20 pounds, something like that. And, of course, in the weigh-in, everybody was saying stupid crap like, oh, the traveling and oh, the holidays. And I was like, that's a crock. Something's wrong. Something's really wrong. And we sat down and ended up talking. And he just broke down and was talking about how his mother was so depressed and so upset. And she felt like they were going to outgrow her and they were going to, you know, that she didn't relate to them anymore and they were going to be healthy and she was going to be fat. Well, obviously, he got depressed. It shut him down, shut his dad down. They both gained weight. What he didn't understand, obviously, is that for all these years, he's gotten and stayed obese because unconsciously he felt like his mother would abandon him. So if she becomes depressed and upset and withdraws because he's getting healthy and she's not, it's a primal abandonment. It's a separation from his mother. He's not aware of that. He doesn't see that. So, you know, it takes somebody from the outside and self-exploration and conversation. Now, I wrote a book called Unlimited, and I asked in the book all the questions and gave all the exercises that I've put myself through, that I've put people I've worked with through. I hope it helps. I think it helps. I know a lot of people it's helped. It's everything that I do with people I work with. With that said, I have to recommend that you either get counseling, that you get some therapy, or you do a tremendous amount of reading on self-help so that you can explore and ask yourself these hard questions and find these kinds of answers. Because it's not something that you just wake up. That's why when I take calls with people, right, and I say, well, why did this happen? Or why did you do this? Or how do you feel when this happens? What do they always say? I don't know.
Yeah.
They know.
Yeah.
It's just a defense mechanism. They immediately go to, I don't know, because the answer is a painful one. So I highly recommend a coach, a counselor, a therapist, or honestly, try reading Unlimited. Take it out from the library. Read my book. So it gets you to think and look inward and answer those tough questions.
Yeah.
It's the end.
I know. No, I know.
Sorry. I wish. Anyway.
Okay. All right. One more.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. This is from Tim.
Oh.
Okay.
A
Jillian.
Boy.
Yes, it's a boy. Jillian, I'm getting really frustrated. Every time I work out, I get this terrible...
What?
Itch.
Really?
Yeah, Tim's got itch.
Oh, itchy. Poor guy. Well, is it every time he works out or it's now pervasive from working out?
Well, he just...
That's
yeah.
The presumption.
Yeah, he's got jock itch.
Oh, okay. You know, women can get that too, and so can people that are obese. Jock itch is just a fungus.
Do I call it jock itch?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a fungus. It has like a name. I think it's like tinealis or something.
Sometimes when I hike every once in a while, I just like, oh, yeah, muckalaka.
Well, no, it doesn't only happen when you exercise. It can happen from exercising, but it's actually moisture. It's fungus, just like athlete's foot. Same thing, except in the groinal area. Yeah, women can get it too.
Wow.
Same thing as a... So here's the key. There are a couple of different things you can do. The first is the key with jock itch is to prevent it in the first place. So you want to wash all your fitness clothes in bleach and hot water because fungus is actually hard to kill. And it gets on you. So it's like, let's say you get rid of it, but it's on your towels and then you use the towels, you can get it again. So like your underwear, your fitness clothes, all that stuff, your socks for that matter. If it's athlete's foot, you want to be real cognizant of like cleaning everything well and often so it doesn't reoccur and all of that. You know, they say for athlete's foot in the showers of gyms, wear sandals. That's same kind of idea.
Yeah.
Moisture. So you want to keep things dry. So loose fitting clothes are key. And then for guys, there's a lot of like gentleman's powders. That I guess, I'm serious. I swear to God that women can use too. There's one.
Sorry. There's some
one.
Gentleman's
I'm
powders.
Serious. There's one that's actually called Fresh Balls. I swear to God. I swear on my life.
I have never been in a store.
No, I
and
promise
seen
you.
Fresh Balls.
I walked into one of my male friends' bathrooms and he had a product called Fresh Balls. I swear on my life. I swear on
That's
my
funny.
Life.
I don't mean to laugh.
I swear on my life. But there's all kinds of like Gold Bond medicated baby powder and all that stuff. Another great thing, though, for getting rid of it, you can use antifungal soap. You can use, Jillian, Selsun Blue, believe it or not.
Yeah.
You can use something called Defense Soap. And a natural cure that works wonders. And by the way, moms... This works on cradle cap. Cradle cap is something that babies get. It's actually a fungus, but no one ever tells you that. I had to figure that out on myself and cure our son's cradle cap. Coconut oil. Powerful, powerful antifungal. Works on jock itch, works on athlete's foot, works on cradle cap. The bomb.
You put it right in the area.
Yeah. Incredible. And probiotics as well. I'm sorry. You need to take probiotics because oftentimes it also has to do with an imbalance of yeast. So what will happen is if you don't have enough good bacteria, the yeast gets imbalanced and that has to do with the growth of the fungus. So you want to take probiotics. And babies, there's one called Baby Gaia or something, and we give it to Phoenix. It's 5 little drops of probiotics. We put it in his bottle and put coconut oil on him. And we wash them once a week with Selsun Blue because it got bad, poor little guy. And I got rid of it. And same, but adults, exact same regimen. that they can use Salsa Blue more often.
You know, when you talked about how you need to really wash your exercise gear for the, guy, for the guy, and I, one thing about that, when I notice guys work out, and this is not a blanket statement about what guys wear when they work out, but they, but they like to wear the same, but they like to wear the same thing. Like I see guys, yeah, I see guys.
This one I don't know.
Well, I guess
Jake, is this true?
The gym I go to, the guys wear a lot of the same, and they so it gets old. They're wearing old gear.
Ew.
You just toss it in your bag after and say, "These are my gym clothes. Gonna keep these on."
That's disgusting.
Exactly. So it's like the same. Like I see guys in the same shorts, the same
yucko. Well, don't do that. That's extremely bad. But, that could be absolutely why you would get something like jock itch.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't do that.
Oh, poor Tim.
Yeah, well.
It's the itchy.
Then we have to wash them, and that takes time.
Oh, my God.
And...
Well, you know what? How would you like to have red, itchy testicles, huh? How about that?
How many washes do I avoid until I get that?
None. Wash your clothes right away. Yeah, wash them. Look at Chino's face. You say some disgusting shit, but I say red, itchy testicles. Oh, I just said the S word. Oh, no. I've been doing so well with swearing on the show, and it just slipped out. So sorry. Don't let there be kids in the car or something. It's just, you say some disgusting things, and I say red, itchy testicles, and all of a sudden you're sick to your stomach? You've got nerve.
Jake,
you do.
We could put some nerve. We could put a beep on that.
On the S word?
I think we can. We can do
it.
That if you'd like.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah. So you now, but now you're listening. You won't have heard it. When you heard that beep, she said something, but we're going to beep it. We're going to put a little beep on top.
Thank God. Are you actually producing the show? Are you actually going to edit in some way, shape, or form? Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we might have to beep red, itchy testicles, too.
No, that's not a swear word. That's anatomy.
Yeah.
too many adjectives.
It's biology.
Wow.
Oh, too many red, itchy. But they are. I'm just saying.
Well, I'm just glad I don't need to worry about that. I'm glad I don't have them. Another thing to worry about.
I told you, you can get it.
Yeah, I just get a little itchy, but not like red itchy.
Move on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, we move on. We have to say so long.
I will. So long. You're the god. Goodbye. 369,
she put that question memorizing me in the mind. This just fine. I done came to the club about 50-11 time. Now can I play with your panty line? The club wanna say I need to calm down. She give me the guards, gonna swim me now. Take a drop down on my threaten me now.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. No need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny and I love you.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car right in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.